Hello, welcome to the Panic Pod, that podcast talking about all things anxiety. This is episode 15 and it's called Agoraphobia, or for our over the Atlantic cousins,
call it agoraphobia.
Yes. Yeah, but because I know how to speak properly, we're going to call it agoraphobia.
Fair.
That's a joke. That's a joke. Yeah, agoraphobia. It's interesting. There's a few misconceptions around agoraphobia. What do you think agoraphobia means?
I really just know it as the fear of going outside. That's really all that I know of it.
Fears, yeah. It's defined as the fear of open spaces.
Ah, okay.
Which is interesting. A lot of the misconception is it's people that can't leave the house, which would tie quite a lot into it. But yeah, it's about a fear of open spaces, or how I like to define it, a fear or a lack of a belief that we can cope in a place that isn't our safe space.
Oh.
I actually think my explanation is more accurate, but I'm not going to take on the powers that be just yet. But yeah, if you've got agoraphobia, it means I don't believe I can cope if I'm not in my safe space.
Right.
I don't believe I can cope with my anxiety if I'm not in my safe space. So that plays into the, you know, the classic agoraphobia example of someone not being able to leave the house. But it could be anywhere. So agoraphobic people can live at home but also go to work.
Right.
But then they can't operate outside of work or home because it's not their safe space.
Right.
It's really interesting. I was chatting to a couple of journalists this week, and hopefully there'll be something in the Independent newspaper, because I chatted to a journalist about it, and a few people have actually reached out this week because we're in lockdown currently.
Right.
If you're listening now, and so obviously there's loads of stuff about agoraphobia because everyone's in lockdown and quarantine. People are asking, will this increase the likelihood of people getting agoraphobia? Will the statistics of people getting agoraphobia increase because they've been inside and kind of being made to stay inside? I thought it was really interesting. And I would predict yes. Because if we look back at our amygdala, and I'm going to quiz you on that shortly, Ella.
Sure.
But if we look at our amygdala, we've been drip-fed in the media and in the news that people and the outside is dangerous. So the amygdala is remembering this and is remembering it, and therefore it's conditioning us and our anxious response to kick off every time we think of going outside or near people or whatever. Not for everyone, but for anxious people in particular, yeah, that applies. What do you think it's like to be inside the mind of an agoraphobic or agoraphobic person?
Well, as you were describing it, it made me think about when we did the episode talking about false comfort and how this is really tricky territory, because false comfort, as we described it, can sometimes be carrying things with you that make you feel like stable and comforted. It's not an irrational thing right now to want to carry hand sanitizer and a face mask on you, but false comforts can take many forms, whether that's I need to have a pint in my hand while I'm out with my friends at the pub, or I need to have certain things on me in case my blood sugar gets low, I need to have a granola bar. But this is a very tricky territory, because it's like, well, your house is a place of comfort just always. You live there.
And I think what's really beneficial, let's say we've got some listeners that have skipped straight through to the agoraphobia episode, just to remind them what Ella's talking about with using really good examples. With anxiety, you have two voices, well, three voices. The first voice is a worried voice, and that begins every thought with what if. So what if I panic when I'm outside? What if I get something bad happens when I'm outside? What if I get a virus when I'm outside? What if I infect someone? What if I can't get to my safe space if I panic? What if someone's not there to look after me? And false comfort, what Ella was just talking about, is the things that we use, that we do to make ourselves feel better in the short term,
right,
but aren't helpful in turning off the anxious response.
Right.
So we take our little bag of contingencies. So yeah, like a granola bar or like a water or our phone on speed dial to get our partner.
Mm-hmm.
And actually false comfort, if you've been listening to the podcast, is the voice that actually doesn't help anxiety. It keeps that anxiety there because it tells the anxious response that it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to listen to more of that, go back to the some previous episodes, mm-hmm. and we mentioned that quite a lot. But yes,
yeah.
Sorry, Anna.
No, that's great.
That
no, I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
And this is where agoraphobia gets tricky, because it's like where you live is going to be a zone of comfort, as it should be, and you can't. It's a weird thing. Like, I've been at points in my life with anxiety where, yeah, it feels like you've been inside so many days that suddenly going out does just elicit this anxious response, just because you haven't seen it in a while, you know, that it sort of seeps in as this thing that starts to like build up a big event around finally going back out into the world. So when we've dealt with that before coronavirus, and we can see how, yeah, some people who've experienced that, like, oh yeah, it was just really weird. Like, I didn't go out for like 4 days, and then when it came time to have to go do something, I was triple checking to make sure I had everything, and I was like, yeah, getting all the sort of false comforts in order. Like, you're going to have periods where you're inside your house, and you're going to have periods where you're outside your house. So to try to like remove this false comfort is really, really tricky, because it's like, well, where is the threshold where you start beating yourself up for like having been in the house for too many days when coronavirus has passed?
Oh, particularly, yeah. But even like, obviously, we did an episode, a bonus episode on coronavirus, so go check that out if you haven't already. But even if it wasn't, if there wasn't a virus outside,
yeah.
If you look at the statistics, there's a high rate of comorbidity between people with panic disorder, which is people who are afraid of panic attacks and have panic attacks and then afraid of next one happening again, but also them alongside them having it comorbid with agoraphobia,
right,
which tells me immediately that it's not the open spaces that they're afraid of. In most cases, and particularly the clients I work with, it's, I don't believe I can cope with my panic if I'm not in a space where I feel safe. And so the best way to avoid panicking in an alien space that's far away from home is to avoid doing it. The ultimate false comfort that you said. What the worried voice says, what if you panic when you go to the supermarket? False comfort. Well, then just order in online. And immediately that false comfort just gets you to avoid, and it wants you to avoid constantly. And honestly, it's almost unconscious and unknowing.
For sure.
From people with that agoraphobia. And then suddenly they wake up one morning and go, I can't leave the house.
Yeah.
Or I can only go to work and my house. Agoraphobia comes in different forms as well. Like, I work with people who can drive from their house to work, but this suddenly becomes the bubble of safety.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense.
So if that road is then closed and they have to find an alternate route, this taps into an agoraphobia, that panic, like, oh, I've only taught myself, my amygdala, my brain, that I can cope in this bubble. So this includes my home, the work, the road to work, and work itself. But if I leave that bubble, my amygdala goes, bam, danger, you can't handle it. Have a load of adrenaline, a load of anxiety, a load of cortisol, a load of racing thoughts, and that's when they panic and they run and they fall for the ultimate false comforts of being saved or someone to get them or whatever. And it's a bit of a nasty one, really, because people don't realize that panic is harmless, it can't hurt you, it's scary, but if you go towards what panics you, it disappears, you know, that exposure that we've spoken about in the past. But it's a strange one. I bet you there'll be a lot of people listening now sat at home going, yeah, I avoid a lot of stuff because I'm afraid of how, just in case I panic, just in case I can't handle it. And what's really sad is the misconception. People just think, oh, they're scared of the outside, there's nothing to be scared of. But it's not actually, they're scared of their own sensations, right. Their own thoughts, how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
I've known a lot of people in my personal life with agoraphobia, and I've had it in the past as well. Mm-hmm. It's grim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be grim. Mm-hmm. But rest assured, it's very treatable.
Mm. So yeah, how do you begin to unpack that in the context of exposure? Is it a conscious, let's step out and see how the world is treating us in the situation? I'm thinking about this particularly in the context of how we're coming out of this whole thing. You know, it's wild that I think, yeah, I've seen some people sort of half joking about, I kind of liked this zone of comfort that I was in. I don't know if I'm ready for things to go back to normal. And then when that's coupled with this real, real threat, it is a thing within itself. But how do people begin to identify, and then how do people start that exposure process when it comes to agoraphobia?
That's a good idea. Well, in the context of now, and at the time of this recording, people in quarantine, lockdown, due to COVID-19. But whenever you're listening to this, it would apply the same. I'll answer it two different ways. If you're a person who's anxious and actually developed a kind of sense of agoraphobia whilst during a pandemic, your amygdala, which is that lizard part of your brain that triggers that fear response, mm-hmm. has been conditioned, or might have been conditioned, mm-hmm. to fear other people. Because, yeah, you've got to keep your distance from other people. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of a threat to that. Mm-hmm. So when you do finally go back into the world when it's okay, don't freak out when you realize that when you look at someone in the face and it looks weird.
Right.
Because that's actually your amygdala going, this is weird.
Sure, yeah.
You know, this was once a danger, now it's not. And you use exposure there by just doing what you do anyway.
Mm.
But with that very compassionate mindset that we spoke about in the last episode of, it's okay to be anxious. You know, it's okay not to feel
right.
normal at the moment.
So acknowledging that it might feel strange. Yeah. And when your amygdala starts firing off in that what was once normal and is now in a new context of normal, but it still feels fearful, acknowledging those critical thoughts that you're having and being compassionate towards them as they arise, as opposed to trying to just go.
It's supposed to happen.
Yeah, right.
It's supposed to happen. Like, it's there. Like, if I went out now and my friend came up to me, and most of my friends, we hug,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he came up to me and started hugging me, my amygdala would go, danger, no.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And I'd step away. Yeah. And good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's supposed to do mm-hmm. at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's helping me, you mm-hmm. know. It's like, whoa, dude, like we can't hug just in case, yeah. social distancing yeah, 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 and all that. Yeah. And so therefore, that's good. But bear in mind, it doesn't just turn off when the news says it's okay to go
for
out.
Sure.
It does for some people, but if you're anxious, you know, it takes a bit of practice. Mm-hmm. And the same principle applies for people who live with standard agoraphobia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's okay to go out and things look a bit weird.
Mm.
It's okay to go out and feel a bit spaced out and strange.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to go out, feel anxious, and feel the full force of that anxiety. That's exposure.
Right.
What agoraphobic people don't realize is that the further they walk away from their house or their safe space,
mm-hmm.
that anxious response actually starts to dissipate.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But if people do it with the intention of turning off the amygdala and the anxious response by going as far out of their safe zone as they can. They can build up to it, or they can just dive straight in. I advise just diving straight in sometimes. You rewire the brain. You rewire the neurocircuitry in the amygdala to say, stop giving me this horrible fear response
mm-hmm.
when I'm out of that safety bubble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and people have... For some people, they'll think, well, it's not just a place, it's a person. So some people actually have a rely on people.
Sure, right. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, like if your normal routines, safe zone is work, safe zone is home, but also safe zone is just whenever you're with your partner, say, as an example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then, good example.
That can be tricky then to consciously endeavor to do the same things without that person even, or or consciously take on something that you know might elicit your anxious response just to expose yourself to it and kind of see it through.
Definitely, yes. Mm. Yes. Ultimately, it's the same principles of exposure that we spoke about in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we spoke about, I particularly remember your examples in our intrusive thoughts episode, where it was kind of like false comfort. We'll just do it anyway. You know, the guy having intrusive thoughts by walking over the bridge. What if I throw myself off? You know, go and feel anxious to rewire your brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the same with agoraphobia.
Mm.
Also, knowing as well. What people find reassuring is that if they don't fully understand the anxious response,
mm.
then they can get swept up in the content of the thoughts.
Sure, right, okay.
And what you've got to know, once you know anxiety, will fill your brain with utter crap. So if you're agoraphobic and you're challenging yourself to leave the house, your brain will be thinking the following: what if you pass out? What if you drop dead? What if your heart rate goes too high and you drop dead? What if you go insane? What if people see you? What if the anxiety never goes away? What if this is a permanent state and now this is your reality? Stay inside. Stay in false comfort. Stay inside. Don't do it. It's okay. Hide. You're all right. Yeah. If you know that's going to happen, that's content. That's crap. Thoughts can't hurt you.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because I think or at least I have only really been talking about anxiety in the context of when we notice the physiological responses, but that's huge. It's just like, sometimes that's not even really something that's setting off, because either it's something that's just not as apparent that you're noticing it, or yeah, thoughts are way more palpable and stronger, which is tricky, because then constantly your brain's also going, is this going to define me? Is this going to define me? When will I not have this anymore? Oh, this is silly. This is silly. And that's all part of it.
Yes. And it's just, I think it's David Carbonell who says this: content is crap.
Mm.
You know, I remember speaking with the great Sally Winston, and she was saying, it's just crap. It's like, forgive any fans of Fox News, but if they're listening, but like, it's like having Fox News on in the background. You can either, you know, but there's no batteries left in your remote. You can either get up, stop what you're doing, find batteries and waste your time, or just sit there and just allow Fox News to be on in the background and don't tune in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And think about it. How many times have you been somewhere where there's been music on in the background?
Mm-hmm.
The
strength
there's
in
been
accepting
a song playing.
It as opposed to fighting that you're frustrated that it's even happening. If you can just try to accept that it's there and just allow it to be there, that can actually be really powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, just and you mentioned the car analogy in the last episode. The same thing. Yeah, just acknowledge that it's there and just kind of let it be there. Just let it chat nonsense in the background. I reiterate to any anxious listeners, thoughts are not dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
Actually given me a nice brainwave for our next episode. Actually, we can do something called thought action fusion.
Oh, right.
It's a great concept, because
give us a teaser briefly, for it. Give us a trailer of
a teaser.
Yeah.
Well, it's just thought action fusion is just a kind of like, I have a thought and then I have an emotional reaction,
right?
And so therefore, what thought action fusion means, if I have a thought and then it's preceded by an internal bodily reaction, then that means it's a bit more real.
Oh, right. I can relate to that.
Does
that
make
sense? Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So suddenly we give attention to the thought.
Yeah.
If you have a thought and then suddenly your heart races, oh my God, that thought, that really is a dangerous thought.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We'll do that next time.
That's really interesting.
You know what will happen next time? We'll sit down, we'll put the mics on and be like, what are we talking about?
So going back to agoraphobia, then I'm curious of, say that someone's at the point where they can start to identify, I do get an anxious response when I'm outside of this routine, when I'm outside of my home, work, home, going to work routine. They're conscious of it. Maybe they reach out to a friend who they've been avoiding hanging out with, and they finally open up and say, hey, I think I have this phobia, but I want to work past it. And I know that I have to go through some exposure to work past that, but I'm still scared. How could a friend in that situation help someone who can identify that it's an anxious response, but that is work that the person themselves needs to do to understand their own anxious response? But how could someone be helpful in that situation?
That's a really good, really good, helpful question. Let's say in this example that you know the psychoeducation behind exposure, agoraphobia, why it's there, and I do too. And I have a lot of agoraphobic people come to work with me. I don't immediately start, you know, shoving knowledge and psychoeducation down the throat, because that's not helpful. The first step is listen. Listen to their story. Listen to what's going on. Secondly, say, actually, I know quite a lot about the biomechanics of anxiety, and I think I may be able to help if you wanted it. You know. Thirdly, I would then say, try and step into their frame of reference and prove that you're in their frame of reference by saying, do you even kind of freak out the concept of leaving the home or leaving your safe bubble? Yeah, I avoid it. Do you behave in a way that you make sure you're always in your safe zone? Yeah. Do you believe that if you weren't in your safe zone, you'd panic to the point where you lose control? Yeah. That's You've great. Stepped into their frame of reference and they get it. Then you can say, that's okay. And here's what's happening. The amygdala has been conditioned to trigger the fight or flight every time you are not in your safe zone. And to do that, you've got to use exposure. Now, you can either use graded exposure, which is, let's practice going to the shops together. Now you practice going on your own. You know, now let's go take it up a notch. Let's go book a weekend somewhere in Scotland. Let's go somewhere, you know, let's catch a flight somewhere together. Now you do it on your own. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's big jumps. But, you take little steps.
I like one of the ways that you explained this before of, like, if you could draw a ladder on a piece of paper and think of what do you feel like is absolutely impossible to do, putting it at the top of the ladder and then working your way back. And that, to me, I think that that would be, I like how you're saying, let's do this together. Now let's do this on your own. Because I'm willing to guess that probably a lot more of the circumstances, if it's a friend of yours, that provides a little bit of a comfort or false comfort, just in the nature of them being there, that you can start to, like, use to work past, to work towards the bigger one.
Yes. And people need to realize that people with panic and agoraphobia feel very isolated and very alone. But the fact that we're even doing a podcast on it, so it tells you that loads of people have it. And if you don't specifically have it yourself, you'll know someone who does. I know three people in my life with agoraphobia. Two people I've managed to help. One person needs to have that help. You know, needs to want to have that help. I'm not going to, like, burst in and go, you know, it's frustrating to watch because I know it's possible, but it has to be their kind of...
That's another good point, is decision. To help a friend, is that you really have to be collaborative with that. It can't just be like, right, I'm ripping out of your comfort zone, because that could do more harm than good in the long run if you're like, right, we're going to the shops.
How many of your mates have sworn to you and said, Ella, you've got to watch this on Netflix. You've got to watch it. It's great. And you're like, yeah, no. And then 6 months later, you're like, mate, have you seen this program? And then your friend wants to kill you because they recommended it to you 6 months before. It's the same. It's like this. It's like this. I'm not saying everyone has it, but there's a lot of people have this, like, internal defiance. And if you start telling them what's best for them, there's like a, no, it's not.
There's a magnetism.
I have it massively. Yeah, it still has me. Not, I'm better with it nowadays. So when someone recommends something, I'll be like, all right, I'll check it out. Like, genuinely go check it out. Or I have a list on my phone where I put it on a list to check it out at some point. But that's the thing with help. You gotta want it.
That's really true. Yeah.
You know, and that's the sad thing. Okay, let's do a little quiz.
Okay.
Ella, you are the therapist, albeit unlicensed and unqualified and not regulated by any profession nor any reputable qualifications to back it up, nor covered by any indemnity insurance just in case you psychologically scar me. Let's go for it anyway. You are the therapist, uh-huh. And I am the... hi, Ella. I'm ready to change. I'm ready to challenge my agoraphobia. I've not been able to leave my house for a long time except to go to work. I'm really sad because I need to go shopping. I rely on my husband to go shopping all the time for me. He gets everything. He collects stuff. He goes out. He takes the kids to school.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a bit pathetic. I can't get out of the house. I just want to be able to get my life back. This has been me for 3 years now. I don't know what's going on. I get panic attacks and I don't know what I get... When I leave the house, I'm just afraid that I'll panic and lose control when I leave the house. And to be honest, it's just not helping. I feel like a bit of a burden on people. What can I do?
Well, you're not a burden on people. This is... a lot of people have this anxious response. And that explanation just covered a lot of ground. It's told me what you feel like is your zone of comfort, who you feel like is in your zone of comfort, who you feel like... you can do certain things with or who you can rely upon. But this is something with graded exposure we can start to overcome. So I would say it sounded like you identified a lot. If there's anything else worth identifying, we'd probably chat about that first and look at what other emotional triggers you feel like there are for this. But then past that point, I would... do the activity of let's build a ladder. Let's build something that you feel like, name something that feels like completely impossible for you to do now. That if I told you to do it, you just, there's a wall of limitations. You really, really feel like you couldn't do it. And from that point, say that's like going on a trip alone. You know, that might be a huge one. Let's walk all the way back from that. Joining some of these comforts in a graded exposure effect to start to think about, well, what's one thing you could try this week or today that would allow you to work towards that? And it's important to remember when you do that exposure that it's fine to have an anxious response. Thoughts will not harm you.
Oh, really? That's helpful to know.
Yes. And even those thoughts that do start to create more of an anxious response, like you feel dizzy, you feel sick, you feel like your heart's racing, palm sweating, you feel like you, your thoughts are going faster than you can process them. That's how we know you're having an anxious response.
So do I have to feel like that every time I leave my comfort zone? I've just got to accept that I'm going to sit there, feel anxious and sick and have racing thoughts. Is that what's going to happen for the rest of my life?
It's not going to happen for the rest of your life, because when you think that by being anxious this will... If you think that it's going to stay this way forever, that's really... selling yourself short on your adaptability and how you could change these circumstances if you started exposing yourself to them. And I myself, in a different part of different manifestation of anxiety, have learned that it's work. You know, you do have to expose yourself to those things, but each time those critical thoughts come in, you have to be kind to yourself, not be upset with yourself for feeling anxious, because feeling anxious happens. It's normal. But when those critical thoughts come in that say, I should be able to do this, let those go. That's not where you're at right now. And the more you expose yourself to things, the easier it will become. And that's why doing it on a graded slow effect will have the best effect.
Bang on. And what's really nice as well is that, if we're being really cynical, even if you took yourself out of your comfort zone,
sure,
went to France, mm-hmm, spoke to yourself like rubbish, mm-hmm, and bullied yourself, and didn't do all the things correctly, the amygdala still turns off, mm-hmm, and still rewires, because you are not in... Exposure in any form is very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's easier when you do it compassionately,
mm-hmm,
but even so, like, and I say this to my clients, and again, if any previous clients are listening, they might have heard this analogy in my practice, is that if I picked up an agoraphobic person who couldn't leave their, felt like they couldn't leave their safe zone, and dumped them in the middle of a foreign country, they would survive.
Absolutely.
They would, right, make their way,
yeah,
home.
Yeah.
And actually, by the time they got home, they'd be calm.
Right. Absolutely.
In fact, no, sorry. After an hour, they'd be calm, because the amygdala goes, oh, look, we're not being attacked.
Yeah.
It's weird. The amygdala decides for itself,
mm-hmm,
that there's no danger,
mm-hmm,
which is bizarre. So you can sit there and bully yourself all you want. And that should be encouraging for people.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, it's not, it takes the pressure away from you. If you're agoraphobic, get out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And just being out, you're already rewiring the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easier with the compassion. It's easier with the psychoeducation that you mentioned, which is really cool. Good effort, by the way. That was really good. I hope that sounded as patronizing as possible.
Shouldn't want anybody to really be damaged by an unlicensed therapist. Try to do my best there. But that's
to be honest, you'd make a great therapist. I've unfortunately worked with some terrible therapists personally, and yeah, I trust you as an unlicensed therapist more than they.
But that's a really good.
I've
point.
Also worked with some fantastic therapists.
But yeah, that just jumping into it can also do so much. Or yeah, I guess to different people, jumping into it means very different things, I suppose. So for if the attitude maybe should always just be, just jump into it, because it really always going to feel it. It's going to feel like you're just jumping into it if you're going to elicit that anxious response and then have to face it. So that's a much healthier thing to say. It's like, just jump into that, whatever that means for you. For some people, it might just be something that's a little step outside the comfort zone. But you're right, the amygdala will shut off eventually.
I love how you mentioned a little bit graded.
Mm.
Have you been to the end of your street?
Mm.
That's target one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to the shop? Target two.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gone visiting your sister in the town next door? Target three.
Mm-hmm.
Target five, book a holiday.
Mm-hmm. I suppose maybe where my mind went with that is just also that to still see it as a huge thing after you've done one mode of exposure, I wouldn't want people to believe that if I do this once and I get through it, then I can go back to what I was for, because it's like you have to ask. That's what you mean about, like, people have to be ready for it, because you can't.
Excellent.
You can't just say. You have to really ask somebody, like, what do you want to get out of this? Are you frustrated with how things are in this cycle? If you do want to change, it's much more effective to have a long sustained practice of trying this out over and over again if you really do want to change. But one
brilliant point as well. Brilliant point. And what you said there, like, there's no point going out and just so you can run back home.
Yes. Yeah.
It's okay to have that a little bit, but that becomes the false comfort that we spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sat there just clock watching, waiting to go back
home.
Okay, initially as a first target, that's okay. But if you're still doing that a few, you know, weeks along, then you're not teaching the brain it's okay to be out of the house.
Yes.
It's always good as well. And if anyone's agoraphobic at home, it's always good to utilize the help of a CBT therapist or a coach, an anxiety coach, or someone along of that ilk that can help you, who understands the biomechanics of anxiety. Well done. You passed the test. You always pass the test. You know, I hope I'm passing your test by being a good co-host. But you always pass the test, the questions that I throw.
You know, it's from this really good book that I read once. Now, what was the... Oh, yeah. It's called Panicking About Panic.
I've heard of that author, and he's also written Anxiety Practical About Panic, which I've heard is amazing, and you should buy for yourself and loved ones. I can't remember the author, but I've heard it's amazing. If you just type in Anxiety Practical About Panic.
Jay Fletcher.
Yeah, of course. Also, I recommend a book that isn't by me called Needing to Know for Sure.
Mm.
by Martin Seif and Sally Winston, and that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it ties into many things about reassurance, and that's my recommendation of the day. All right, we'll wrap that up there. Mm-hmm. If you've got any questions, email them over to talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. Follow Ella on Instagram, that's Ella of the Net. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Instagram, that's Joshua Fletcher Author. And we're on Facebook and things like that.
And if you forget those names, we just made our own Panic Pod Instagram anyway. So, at the Panic Pod.
Yes, we have.
Excellent.
Yeah, the Panic Pod stuff, and we're going to put stuff on there, and it's going to be fun. Brilliant. Okay, thank you very much, Ella. I really enjoyed that episode. I think agoraphobia, particularly at the current time of recording, is very appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to talking about thought action fusion.
I'm so excited.
In our next episode.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Great talking to you, Josh. Okay. Bye.
Thanks, Ella. Bye-bye.